And welcome back to Veritas. This is Mel Fabregas, and I'm here with my guest, Ole Damegaard. Ole, before the break, I said that you contacted me saying that you could have been responsible for defusing a possible false flag massacre that could have involved so much the truth movement, internet censorship. Do you want to expound on that?
First of all, I want to say this, that it is speculation, yes. It is not to polish my own halo. It is to make people aware of how these things are set up so that the sooner we can become aware and the sooner we can see the signs of false flag operations and so-called terror acts, the sooner we can put the spotlight on the perpetrators and even possibly defuse them so they don't even happen. Because up until now, all the ones I looked into, it's after it happened. Now I would say, let's do it before it happens. So if I describe what happened in Denmark, then maybe you, the listeners, when you start hearing about a drill in your town, they're going to do some kind of exercise, anti-terrorism or anti-mass shooting or anti-bomb things or something like that. As soon as you hear about that, go down there. Make them, the people that are setting up this drill, start filming them. Make it very obvious that you see them, that they are looked upon. And what, if not for some other reason, then film the site where this drill is going to be so that if, God forbid, something very ugly happens, then this type of footage would be incredible help as an evidence when you compare afterwards. Because then you can suddenly see before and after, and you can start tracking down many different parts of evidence that can be crucial. So I was invited as to come to Denmark. I'm not part of a group. I'm not a protester. I'm not an activist. I'm myself. I am me. I'm just a normal guy who's doing my absolute best to help the world the best I can. And so I was very happy to say yes, to go up there, even though I was advised not to, because I had been standing up against this global elite for many years, and they're very aware of what I'm doing, as they are with most people, you included, Mel, of course. And these are hard-hitting people, you know, you don't mess around with them. At the same time, there are two different ways of protection when it comes to this. Either you go very, very discreet under the radar and do not let them become aware of you, or you need the spotlight right on you to get some kind of protection from that. Because then if something should happen to you, for instance, Mel, then since you are one that is pumping out this type of information, if something happens to you, that would just confirm what you are saying, what you are spreading out, and so on. So they're afraid of that. They're very afraid of the power of a martyr, and so on. So they avoid these people. Sometimes they statue examples like Michael Hastings and so on. But otherwise than that, they try to avoid people in the spotlight.
How about Breitbart? You know, did you ever find anything about Breitbart?
Who is that?
Breitbart. Breitbart.com. It was this conservative, man who had his own website, very opinionated, very dangerous to the Obama administration. One day he was just, he supposedly said that, this is on Friday, I believe, he said that by Monday he would have some very important information to say about Obama. He went to a restaurant, left the restaurant, and fell to the ground and died.
I can only say that he's one of many that has, you know, when you go out and say, within a few days, I'm going to come forward with this and this information, that is one secure way of signing your own death warrant if you are in a position like that. There's so many, so many examples like that. So maybe he died naturally. I would put my money on that, look into that case, because it smells a long way.
Yeah, yeah.
But
so what else?
No, so I flew into Denmark, and one of the things, the day before, we were four key speakers. There was Luke Radovsky from We Are Change. It was Dan Dix from Canada. And it was the 9/11 expert from Denmark, Niels Harrit, Professor Niels Harrit, and then myself. And the night before I flew in, Luke Radovsky and Dan Dix had been arrested inside the Marriott Hotel because I think that they had been filming in there, and when the security people approached them, they refused to delete the footage. At least that's what I was told. I'm not sure, but that's what I was told. So they were arrested, and I heard that just before I got on the plane. So I felt, you know, a little uncomfortable coming to the airport, because I thought maybe if two of the four of us have already been arrested, maybe they would like Mr. Damgaard to take a little walk as well and stay away from the meeting, you know. So I was preparing myself for maybe having to confront you know, the passport control or something like that. I came to the airport and I walked straight through. There was no one in passport control. There was nothing, which is unusual in my opinion. And but I was happy for that. And then I was met there by a friend of mine who was kind enough to drive me straight to the hotel. This was the night. It was on Wednesday evening. On Thursday evening, Thursday morning was when they started. They were expecting the first members of the Bilderberg group to arrive to the hotel. So I asked to be if we could go to the hotel just so I could check out the locality, you know, where the roads, the streets, the buildings, the security, just to get a feeling for what was going to go down the next day. And we drove to the hotel. One thing that I found very odd from day one when I heard about this hotel was, why did they pick a hotel right in the center of Copenhagen? I mean, this group can choose any hotel anywhere, I would say, more or less. They control so many of these hotel chains, so there's hundreds of hotels internationally that they could choose from. So why on earth one so openly exposed right in the center of Copenhagen? If anyone is interested, you can go to my website, lightonconspiracies.com, and then there's one menu where it says event. If you go down there, it says the Bilderberg event. And if you go down on the sub menu, it says false flag warning. There you can see the photos, the layout, the aerial shots, and so on of the whole location. So when I describe it, it will maybe be a bit easier for you to understand. But anyway, we came to the hotel. And I was expecting police, you know, maybe bomb-sniffing dogs, police vehicles, all of these things surrounding the hotel. Came there, absolute zero. There was nothing there. There was hardly any people in the area. And the only thing I saw was two Danish police officers standing to the side of the hotel. No protection in front of the entrance, nothing. I thought that was so odd. And the only thing that I could see was that they had placed three identical Mercedes limos, black with tinted windows, which is the trademark, more or less, of this group. That is always the type of vehicle they arrive to these meeting at. So I looked at this empty big square, this hotel in the center of Copenhagen, and nothing, no security, no police, just these three vehicles in front of the entrance. So I thought, how odd is this? I started walking around, and when you look at the building, it's made totally of glass. You know, you can see in through the sides and from the front and the back. So you can see people in there, you know, in the stairs and the corridors and so on. Very strangely chosen for security. Also, the entrance to the hotel is very close to one of the major street going through Copenhagen, meaning that it's very open for any type of drive-by attack, you know, hand grenades, anything like that, if that was what you feared. It's also placed right on the bank of a water canal, at least 300 meters wide or something like that, on the backside behind the hotel. Also, once again, very difficult to secure when it comes to security, because on the other side of the canal, you have like hundreds and hundreds of buildings in Copenhagen that can see this hotel, you know. So anyone with a Stinger missile or a rocket launcher, whatever, from every single window would be a threat, you know. So I thought, how odd is this? So you got the canal, the hotel, then one of the big streets in Copenhagen, two lanes in both directions. On the other side of that, There's a big open space, like a graveled area, that is normally used as a parking lot for the Danish police, because right behind that is the headquarters of the Danish police for Copenhagen. Big building and very big parking space. This open space had been fenced in. I'm not sure if it's fenced in normally, but it was fenced in now. And that was where they were preparing for the truth movement to gather, right in front of the hotel. I mean, the distance between that area and the entrance, very, very short. I mean, maybe 100 meters. I don't know, with yards and so on, but not something similar. And then on the sides of this big parking area and around the police headquarters were big buildings, the same height as the hotel. I mean, it's nothing compared to American big buildings, but when you come to Copenhagen, big buildings. Same, there were insurance companies, some banks, and so on, and all of them with lots of windows and glass again. So I looked at this area. They were just about to start building like a concrete wall that would go around the whole hotel, concrete like a meter high, and then they were going to put fence on top of them to keep the truth movement away. They also put cloth on this fence, but it was open so that you could take perfect photos from the parking area and to the entrance where they would come in and out. When it comes to security, an absolute no-no. So I looked at this area. I thought, how odd is this? You know, why on earth? Here they are. They got the best military advisors, security advisors, that money can buy. I mean, they even print the money themselves. So why on earth would they choose this hotel? So option one, decoy. The way I could see it, a decoy. They're going to get some doubles in there. Yeah. They're going to get the truth movement in to this parking lot. And the reason why they've chosen this hotel, the reason is that it's very close to the main train station in Copenhagen, so that it would be very easy to control all the people coming from the trains, buses, and so on. And then just a few hundred meters that the police needed to control to get them into, like sheeps, into this corral and then have them under control there.
That's exactly what I was going to tell you, that maybe it happened somewhere else.
While they were meeting somewhere else, yeah. Just like you said, an army base, a luxury hotel somewhere, a castle, maybe in a totally different country. You know, here we are in Copenhagen and they meet in Portland, USA. Do you know, like, mm-hmm. Why on earth do it so obvious and so open? So I thought, okay, decoy, that would be one option. But why this hotel? They always do things for a reason, you know. They're smart people, these people. So I started looking around saying, why on earth this place? And then suddenly I saw it. Oh my God. Do you know, with my many years looking into false flag operations, suddenly, since I know how they think, I can see it through the methods, the places, the locations, how they set these things up. When I looked at this area, I thought, oh my God, it's perfect for a false flag operation that in one blow could knock out the truth movement globally. And if I can go into a little details on how I think they might have planned this, this is pure speculation. I'm just saying the signs that I saw there.
Please do. This is the meat of the interview, yes.
The buildings around this area were all controlled by the elite. The insurance companies, banks, owned and controlled by the elite. Okay, so you got the hotel, also the Marriott Hotel, controlled by them. So you got all the buildings, including the police headquarters, were also controlled by the Bilderberg Group through the legal system from the top key people. So you have the whole area under your control. So what they could do was get the truth movement in there, in the fenced-in corral, controlled by Danish police that would not know that this was a false flag operation at all. They were just giving orders, check these people so they don't get out of line and so on. So you get the whole truth movement in one place. Hopefully that would be like 1,000 or 2,000 people there. Then you would send in some limos with doubles or some old Bilderbergers and so on, but mostly doubles. very, very easy to get away with that. I mean, Queen Beatrix, just get a weird hairdo on and set on a lady, send her in there. Henry Kissinger or Dick Cheney, just pull a one of these masks over his head and get
David
him.
Rockefeller,
mean,
yeah.
There you go. It's so easy because you only have a few seconds when they leave the vehicle and go in, and everybody was, Queen Beatrix. Okay. Oh, it was Henry Kissinger. Who knows? I mean, nowadays, with the makeup and so on, you need to get very, very close to be able to spot the, right. these type of thing. So easily done. You would send in some doubles there. At the same time, this building would be more or less empty, but filled with explosives, just like in Oklahoma City, just like in Norway and others, other type of operations where they've done similar. So you would fill the whole hotel, and the explosives would be aimed straight forward, not to the side so that it would damage the other buildings. But here we have an area where the whole blast could go totally straight forward and on top of the truth movement, not damaging anything else. If this would follow the template as well, there would be some kind of problem with this building, either a crack in the foundation or asbestos or fungus or something like that, maybe because it was built too close to the water canal or something like that. And that would be a reason for them not wanting to spend millions having to repair or tear down and build a new hotel, but instead just a few weeks before change the insurance policy to include terror acts.
Sounds familiar.
Very familiar. I'm just describing their methods, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it would be very interesting if somebody took the time to look into their insurance policies and see if this actually happened. Okay, so what I would then do, I would place some film crews on top of the buildings or inside these buildings, so I would get footage from all different angles. I would also place a team with a wide angle down the street so that you would get the truth movement on the left, and you would see the side of the hotel and the front to the right. So you'll get a perfect shot with including the whole area. Then I would place some secondary explosives in the area for the truth movement. These would be concealed maybe as parking meters or parcels or something like that, or underground, you know, under the gravel. Very easy to through because it was gravel. You could just dig down a few decimeters, put the explosives there and fill it over. Nobody would notice. That could be done days ahead. And then maybe some blood canisters and things that would be part of the explosion, just spreading what would look like blood everywhere, you know, just to get the drama going, because we're talking about an event to get the emotional reaction from the population saying, oh my God, something needs to be done. And in this area, in this example, it would be to blame the truth movement of being behind this terror act against this poor, innocent little elite group that was just meeting to have a nice little chat and a tea inside the hotel.
Now, what would have happened to the elite who was allegedly inside?
But they were, if this was the true setup, they were not in there. The hotel would be more or less empty. There would be some people in there that they would blow up to get the credibility, you know, body list.
But if the perception was that they were inside, even though they weren't there, but if the perception was that they were inside, then what would come of that?
They would give a body count list, you know, but these names, maybe there would be like 17 or something like that to have some kind of weight in the press. These would be mostly bodyguards, security people, yeah. people from the kitchen staff, cleaners, and then maybe throw in a few old Bilderbergers that they were wanted to get rid of anyway.
Right.
You know,
right.
But to get credibility. Okay.
Yeah.
At the same time, the main group would be way far away from this place, you know. So the whole, how they could have get this stage was to, once the truth movement was in there, you need to stir the energy, you know, you need to get some action. And you can't start a riot with only like a handful of people. You need 1,000 or 2,000 to really make an impact. So I would also say that that was what was leaked out in the media, that between 1,000 and 2,000 people had gathered. As long as I was there, the maximum I saw was about 130, maybe 200 people in total. So where did that come from? Okay, so What you would do then is send in a team of provocateurs. You only need a handful to stir it up.
Okay.
And these people will go in, look like truthers, and suddenly start shouting, throwing things, you know, throwing rocks, maybe a few Molotov cocktails, a lot of foul language, just stir it up like this. If that wouldn't be enough, then what they do is send in a secondary team of provocateurs. These would be dressed in Danish police uniforms, and they would arrest a couple of people that would also be provocateurs, but look like normal people. And these would then be dragged in front of the hotel, along right in front of the fence, in front of the crowd. Maybe they would beat them up a bit. You know, they would scream, let me lose, all of, making that. It's so easy to get a crowd going. You know, you can see in Ukraine and many, many different areas, how do you get this, the whole thing going? Well, by doing things like this.
Yeah.
So once the whole emotion was going in the crowd, lots of screaming, shouting, all of this, suddenly, boom, out blows the whole front of the hotel, lands on top of this whole crowd. With the secondary explosives, you have blown up the bodies, body pieces everywhere, blood, all of the smoke, all of these horrendous, horrendous images that would then be pumped out in media to get the reaction globally saying, oh my God, something needs to be done. And in the media, within 30 seconds after them starting to report about that, you will hear the reason for the false flag. It's standard. It would come within a minute. The reporter will say, ban the weapons, ban the knives, ban whatever it is that their solution is. And in this case, it would be, look at this truth movement. Here they are saying that they're peace loving and they want a better world for us all. And what do? They blow up this poor, poor, innocent group of elite people. They massacre them. So in one go, what they could do with this example, pumping it out everywhere, saying, my God, for the security of the people in the world, we need to censor the internet. That is where the truth movement gets all the information and spread it. We need to shut down all alternative media like Veritas and many other radio stations. We need to ban all rights to demonstrate, all rights to protest. We need to ban all rights to gather in big groups and so on. I'm not getting this out of thin air. I'm saying this is the way they have done it, through the history of the world.
And
again,
I know.
And again, again.
And I know you're speculating, but I hope that you're not giving them any ideas.
No, I hope to totally expose it, you know, pre-expose.
Sure.
But anyway, when I was standing there, I just thought, oh my God, either I'm really paranoid here or I'm actually seeing a possibility of something very, very ugly. So what I did was I went straight home to my friend. He had internet access, and I called up Chip Tatum. You can check out Chip Tatum at chiptatum.com. He's a whistleblower now, but he used to be a deep cover agent, CIA agent, for 25 years. He was a Night Stalker pilot. He was one of the pilots in the Iran-Contras scandal, weapons out of the States, drugs in, starting the whole crack epidemic in the States and so on. He was a black op assassin, and he was the commander of a super secret team called Pegasus that was under the personal control of George Bush Sr. This was a team of assassins that went globally at least on 17 missions, taking people out. And he was also taking part of some false flag operations during his career.
Let me stop you right there for a second about Chip Tatum, and you know how I feel about George H.W. Bush.
Ooh.
How can we possibly trust a CIA agent? I mean, once CIA, always CIA.
Mel, you can never trust. I mean, this is the thing. You never know who you're dealing with. I can only say that I've got to know Chip, and as far as I can see, he is who he claims to be. He is. There's no way that I can accept what he's been part of, what he's done over during all of these years. But at the same time, I respect him. I have big admiration for his courage to stand up against these people, because they have tried many times to get rid of him in different ways. But you're so accurate. I mean, you cannot trust. I don't really trust anyone. It doesn't matter who they say they are.
But why the
you
change
never
of
know.
Heart? Why the change of heart, Chip Tatum's? Did what enlightened him to say, you know what I've been doing, I did. I cannot change the past, but I can change the future. What changed him?
No, it came to a point where before George Bush took over the CIA, Bill Colby, who was the former director of CIA, mm-hmm. and took Chip under his wing. He was also the one that recruited him in early years. And he said, listen, there's this very ugly guy on his way in. You need to gather in insurance. You need to gather evidence. If you want out any time in the future, you need to have a lot, you know, because otherwise there's absolutely no way you can get out.
I see. An insurance policy.
And okay. This is what he, these helicopters and these big medevac planes and so on that they flew in and out with drugs and weapons and mm-hmm. so on, they had very high-tech equipment as well. So he filmed people like George Bush Sr., like Bill Clinton, Dan Lasseter in MENA, Arkansas, mm-hmm. and so on, taking these drugs, receiving these drugs, dealing with them, and many of the meetings as well was recorded. So he was gathering this information over years. Then Bill Colby was killed, or he was found dead, drowned, but he was taken out, I promise you. And it was just getting uglier and uglier, but there was no way that that Chip could get out. And he was starting to turn down more and more of these missions. And then it came to a point where George Bush was very, very upset with Ross Perot as he was becoming a candidate for presidency. And he was ordered to take him out or to get rid of him. And Chip just absolutely refused. He said, no way am I going to kill or take out an American citizen on American soil. This is not part of my job. I have never agreed to that. And at that point, it just came to a point where he couldn't take it anymore. And he stood up and they said, and he showed them what evidence he had, because they wanted to kill him right away. And he showed them a copy of the evidence that he has spread out all over the world globally that will be exposed if he does not get in touch with them once a year.
You know why Perot ran against Bush, right?
Nope.
I spoke with a former congressman. The interview is public now, but he was a former congressman in the 80s, and he found out through the Navy that we still have American POWs in Southeast Asia, in Cambodia, in Vietnam, and he received the information, and Perot found out. So Perot was so furious, and he had connections, so he wanted to speak with the president. So he went to the White House, didn't see the president, but the Vice President Bush said, you're going to meet with me, and you're going to drop this right now. And Perot said, no, I want to see the president. No, you will stop this right now. So he left very furious, and he decided, you know what, I'm a billionaire. I'm going to run against you. And that's, in my opinion, what caused. Well, he did leave the race because supposedly his daughter got sick or what have you. Yeah. But that was the main reason why he did what he did. And obviously, yeah. Bush wanted to get rid of him. Now you're making me connect more dots. I didn't know this part.
Anyway, it came to a point where they tried to get rid of Chip big time, but they didn't know how to. So in the end, he negotiated. They wanted him to turn over this evidence, but it's like the very minute he would have done that, he would have been a dead man. So he negotiated. And in the end, it came to an agreement that he would accept to take a jail term. I think he was in jail for a couple of years in the mid-90s to discredit himself, you know. And after that, once he got out, he left the States and he went down to South America. He made some big interviews with the former chief of the FBI, Ted Gunderson, and so on. Yeah. When he went open about many of these things around the Iran-Contras and many other revealing incredible secrets, And then he disappeared in 99, I think. And I and many other people thought that he and his wife, Nancy, had been taken out. You know, there were rumors that they were, their bodies were found and so on. But now when I speak to him, it turns out that he was down in Colombia, I think, for 10 years, or Peru. And now he came back just a year or two ago and is doing everything he can to stop this whole cabal.
So you're still in touch with him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like you say, I don't know. I mean, I'm naive. I'm sometimes, who knows, maybe he's taking me for a giant ride. I have absolutely no idea. But anyway, I called him and I said, listen, Chip, I've got this eerie feeling about this location. So he said, please describe it. I described it exactly like I did to you. And he said, so how were the security behind the building on the water side? I said, absolute zero. There was nothing, absolute nothing. He said, any military vessels, divers, anything like that? Nothing. He said, this sounds very much like a stage, you know, a prepared stage event. So he said, please be aware of strange sounds. I can't remember what he said else, you know, things where that could hide explosives, wires, strange people, and get out, you know, stay away from that area. I just felt absolutely not. What I'm going to do is, after I spoke to him, I called up Jim Fetzer, Professor Jim Fetzer, who spent his whole adult life looking into false flag operations, 9/11, JFK, and so on, and also a former Marine. And I described the whole thing. He said, it sounds so plausible. There's a good possibility that what you suspect could be the real thing. So I also spoke to another one who had 24 years in security forces and security services and so on. He said, it sounds very plausible what you're saying. So at that point where I felt it's not only my imagination who are going wild, but these are heavyweight people, experts globally, who says the same thing. So what I did was I called up radio stations, international radio stations, in New Zealand, Canada, the States, different countries in Europe, and so on. And I got the radio host to record the time and the date when this was recorded. And I said, I described the whole scenario. This is what I expect that might happen. God forbid, God forbid. But should it happen, then please be aware of that this was not a work of the Truth Movement, but a total inside job aimed at demonizing the Truth Movement. But even better, my intention was even more, because I hope that by getting it out there as soon as possible, and these radio hosts were incredible. They just pumped it out within half an hour. It was all over the place. To diffuse it, to put the spotlight right on them, saying, if this is what you plan, if you touch that trigger, if you so much as touch it, we know it's you. We know what you're up to. So I spent up until 4 o'clock that morning with these radio stations. And then some hours later, I went down to the area. There were very few people. I think I might have been part of scaring people off, which I must say, I'm sorry for the event arrangers and so on. But at the same time, they needed a crowd to get this going if this was the true scenario. And with just a handful of people, they would never pull it off, you know. And what did I find, Mel? What did I find in this parking lot when I came there? A massive big pentagram, a 6-meter big pentagram made of train sleepers. There were actually two. You can see the photos on my website. There were actually two pentagrams next to each other. The other one was made from these orange cones, traffic cones, you know, and then they had taken tape, you know, when you take like on a crime scene, that type of plastic tape around in a pentagram shape. And then in the middle, they had placed a barbecue, like a grill.
Hmm?
You know? And when you look at the way the these dark forces uses symbolism and signs like this, like the pentagram, they use it in a very, very demonic way, you know, a very evil way. And sometimes there's a fire right in the middle of the pentagram when they use it. Also, sometimes there's this very strange ritualistic type of thing when they do assassinations and so on. So could you imagine, like, the aerial footage of this place, the whole thing gets blown up. There's smoke, dead bodies everywhere among the truth movement. And right in the center of all of this mayhem are a massive big pentagram.
So
can you imagine the impact that would have in global media?
Definitely. But what do you think? Could have it been ritualistic, or could it have been to demonize more the truth movement?
I would say to demonize the truth movement. But the thing was that what I did was straight away when I saw it, I got hold of a friend and I said, let's pull the whole thing apart, you know. So we were sweating like pigs trying to get this whole thing apart. You know,
but you disassembled the pentagram.
Right away, we did it.
Wow.
We did it within 10 minutes. It was we pulled the whole thing apart. But it was big, really big. And I thought that somebody overnight had done this. But then, like half an hour later, I was confronted by a very strange man. I have no idea who these people were, but I can just describe them. They came... a very tall man with a white hat on a bicycle with a box in the front. It looked like a flower power painted box. And in the box were a woman dressed in a purple, very big coat, you know, like almost like, you know, you see witches in the old Hollywood stories and that. Light purple and a big, big pink hat, big glasses. And they had... a big flag, freedom flag, and then this box was painted, and they came on this bicycle. And the man came forward to me and was very upset with me, saying that, how dare you pull apart our workshop? I said, workshop? What do you mean? Yeah, we had this light workshop, a love workshop, where we used the star symbol. I said, are you the one who have put this here? And he said, yeah, we spent hours doing it. And this man, I have no idea, you know, sometimes with mind control and how they manipulate people, you know, to infiltrate the truth movement, I have no idea. But these people were odd, to say the least. And he said, can you please, since you pulled it apart, can you please help us repair it? I said, I'm very sorry, but absolutely no way. If you want me to make a smiley or a square or something like that, I'll be happy to do it. But could you imagine me as well being one of the key speakers, and then there's photos taken of me making a pentagram?
Yeah.
You know, absolutely no way would I do that. And so he got very upset, and the woman came over to me and said, but please, you have to understand that this is a love workshop. And but sure. I said, the symbol you're using, it's like using a swastika in a synagogue.
You could have been the Patsy.
It's the same type of magnitude of symbolism used. You know, so please, for God's sake, the location is awfully chosen. And she was a bit upset with me. And while we were talking, the other guy got a drum and was walking around us in circles, hitting the drum, you know. And anyway, it ended with them coming forward, said, you know, we're very upset with you, but if you do not want us here, then we will leave. I said, I would love to see you somewhere else. Then the very next day, when it was time, I held my speech just outside the Marriott Hotel, which was a very strange experience, because here, this group with a very dark agenda, in my opinion, were meeting just a stone throw away, so close. And then here we were gathered, trying to expose the whole thing, but coming from a point of love and compassion. So it was a very powerful experience, I think, almost like, you know, the light and the darkness meeting, and there was almost like an exorcism going on. And afterwards, it ended with the audience running forward. I got a group hug from, I think, 40 people or something like that. Absolutely amazing. But while I was giving the speech, I was giving one on Friday and also on Saturday, these people were back on the site again, making these symbols. And while key speakers, it was not only me, I think it was Rudovsky as well, this woman came forward and started walking around us in circles with a goat horn and just acting so weird. So I had no idea what was going on. I could just say it was very odd and very weird.
Very, very
So
strange.
very strange, very, very strange.
So
And
conclusions on that Bilderberg meeting, if indeed occurred, usually what was the name of the person who used to be the longest standing investigator that used to go to every to
Jim Tucker.
Jim Tucker, who passed away not too long ago.
Yeah, he died last year.
Last year, do you know what the outcome of this meeting could have been?
I think on the agenda, one of the things on the agenda is how to get rid of the truth movement, as far as I've been able to figure out. There were also rumors while we were there that they had actually been meeting in a castle called Kokkedal, just outside Copenhagen. And one thing that I found very suspicious as well was I was giving interviews from early morning to late in the evening during these days because there's a massive interest awakened about these things, which is very positive, I would say. But there were so few limos coming on the first day. I only saw like a handful, and I did not see one single person that I recognized. I saw people enter the building. I saw them inside the corridors, I mean, with name tags around their neck and so on. And some of them even walked up to the glass window and waved down to the crowd and so on, but absolutely no one that I recognized. And then if we say that this thing that I think was planned, if that is the true scenario, then the whole group would have been in a different location. We're talking 140 members normally. That is a lot of limos, you know, that because they normally come one or two in each one
Right.
with bodyguards in front, sometimes with a car full of bodyguards behind them. So a lot of vehicles, you know, coming in, and also leaving on the last day. I saw very, very few. And then on the second day, I think on the morning, because on the first day when there were these rumors started going that they're not in there yet, they're not in there. Then suddenly, an old general, an old Bilderberger from NATO, came out jogging. You know, had changed his clothes and was jogging the streets of Copenhagen, so that some photos was taken of him. And then, woof, he turned and returned to the hotel and went in back there. What was that? I mean, here's one of the most important meetings of the year for them, and he goes out jogging. I would say it was like, yes, we are in here. You doubt whether we are here? We are here. You know, that's why they sent him out and then back in. And then on the second day, suddenly these limos started arriving. This is my interpretation. At least maybe other people think otherwise, but this is how I experienced it. Then suddenly these vehicles started coming. Suddenly the whole security changed. There was like military helicopters going really low over the area. There were people on the rooftops, some of them looking like snipers. There were NATO vessels in the water, NATO soldiers fully equipped on the back of the hotel, and the police, the Danish police everywhere around the truth movement, exactly the type of security you would expect. The way I interpret this is that this group had to go from plan A, false flag massacre, to plan B, my God, we need plausible denial. We need to get back into the building so that we can say, no, how can you even expect us of doing such an awful thing? Why would we blow up ourselves? We were in there all the time. This is what I think happened.
Now, with after Bilderberg, you have seen what's happening now with Russia, Ukraine, the United States. A lot of strange things are happening here. I don't know if you're following the news with, and I don't mean to get political at all, because I'm apolitical. I don't have a dog in this race, but I see that, you know, as long as the game is the same, who cares about the players? But we've seen a lot of with immigration here, the shootings. You know, many things that don't make sense are happening in the United States. Plus, you have in Iraq at the group now ISIS. I received some information today that it's the new resurrection of Al Qaeda, because they want a new false flag. They want to blame it on a new boogeyman and start a bigger false flag event, because they apparently it's an issue of timing. They have delayed because of these interruptions. Maybe what you did in Copenhagen was an interruption, and they keep delaying, but they want to come out with a bang, and that's why they have this ISIS group. They're making Syria come to play as well, Iran. What do you think is happening with all these pieces coming together?
I think the ship is going down. I think it's falling apart around them. I think they have major problems in many different areas. They used to be untouchable. They used to have total power without us knowing it. But now the spotlight is so aimed at them, and it's just falling apart. And I think that is why people are jumping off the ship as well. A few years ago, it was Queen Beatrix. She said bye-bye. Then the Pope, it was getting too close to him when they started finding out about the pedophile exposures connected with the royal English family. So he said, I'm out of here. Then now, at the same time, George Bush Jr., Dick Cheney, Tony Blair was charged in Kuala Lumpur for wars against humanity, wars against peace, and that they were sentenced for having started the war on Iraq totally without any reason, only for greed and so on. And this sentence was then passed on. The whole case passed through the juridical system, and the sentence was given to the war tribune in Hague, where it's still active. And then this year, with a court case against the English Queen and the former Pope, and so also for child genocide and this whole pedophile trafficking being part of that, it's falling apart. And now the Spanish King said, oh, give me some crutches, you know, I'm bad health, I need to get out of here, woof, so he leaves. I think it's going down and they're getting very desperate. That is why I'm speeding up with all of these things. Now they, with all these false flag operations. Also, it's like, you know, when you've seen Rocky 1, 2, 3, and 4, when Rocky 18 comes along, it's sort of like, how can you change the theme? How can you need a new bad guy. Okay, we tried Al-Qaeda for such a long time. We've run out of the options there. You know, we've done all the different variations with false flag operations. We can't pull it off anymore. So we need to create a new boogeyman, exactly like you described. I just think they're getting very desperate, very sloppy, very, there's very little preparation, low budget, very not skilled people anymore, because the skilled ones are starting to leave. So I think within a very near future, we will see more and more people jump the ship, you know, and hopefully become whistleblowers, have some kind of balls and step forward in transparency and say, this is what I have been part of. You know?
But let me get this straight. We spent over a decade in Iraq, the longest conflict we've ever been involved in Afghanistan, billions of dollars spent, thousands of soldiers lost, and over 1.5 million Iraqis dead, all because of allegedly weapons of mass destruction that were never found. Now, this group, ISIS, comes along, and in less just maybe a week or two, they found weapons of mass destruction that they're using. So we here, with our wherewithal, with our billions of dollars and unlimited funds and our military might, didn't find the weapons of mass destruction, but this group ISIS does find the weapons. Isn't this another ploy to propel us to another false flag and another war, maybe?
Totally. They're just doing it again and again and again and again and again. Change the name of the countries, change the name of the boogeyman, same template being pulled off. Problem, reaction, solution. You need a boogeyman to be able to pull it off. And they're doing it again and again. And these wars are totally unjust. And I know we spoke about this last time I was on your show also. It's so tragic how people enlist thinking that they're doing it for freedom and liberty and they're going to come home with medals and being admired by girls and their families and so on.
Cannon fodder.
Instead, what they're being trained to is become absolute ruthless, deadly assassins, killers, and killing, destroying, rape and plunder, not even for their own greed, but for the greed of this little group of super gangsters. I mean, they make Hitler look like a schoolboy, I tell you, once you start looking into the agenda of these people. And then they get these soldiers, I mean, your sons and daughters, or maybe you're a soldier yourself, totally duped into thinking that is the thing is that you're doing something good, that you're liberating a country somewhere. Absolute bullshit. It's absolute lies. You are being totally duped into becoming this weapon of destruction. And they do not care about you at all. The second they don't need you, you're an empty uniform. And the higher up you get in the ranks, the easier they get rid of you, you know, because they fear generals. And when people get up to a level where they start having some power themselves and can start turning their army against them, that's the first one that will go on a regular basis, chop the heads of them, chop, 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 chop.
And if it's not proof enough that what's happening in the veterans' hospitals in the United States, not proof enough to tell you that they, the government, doesn't care about you, then I don't know what else can convince them.
You're being used for medical experiments. They test out all types of awful gases, radioactive ammunition. They test out different awful, awful medicines and whatever on you. You come home, you're treated like scum. You're not even being... I spoke to Chip Tatum. He said the normal time to, if you come home and you've been wounded or got a leg blown off or something, the normal time for you to, from you apply to get help from the system for these type of things, is 6 years.
Yeah.
And people, veterans, who are the homeless, the veterans, again and again, and treated like absolute worthless people.
To Vietnam and all over again.
It's the same thing. I mean, I get tired of repeating myself, but if we start whatever war we will, or whatever atrocity, whatever so-called terror act, it's like speaking about the same thing again and again. They use it again and again and again, and we're buying it. This is the crazy thing, that we don't see it. It beats me. I don't get it. I mean, how can you be so blind that you keep buying into the official story?
And so many people, and so many people say, yeah, Mel, but they're voluntary. They're, you know, Vietnam was different. It was the draft. It was involuntary. There's so many, you know, people with a conscience that didn't want to go, but here they're volunteering. And the reason why they're volunteering is because we haven't implemented a draft. And the reason for that is, and I got these figures about a year or two ago, 50% of the force in Iraq and Afghanistan was private contractors, probably earning over $100,000 each. And all the death figures that we have seen do not include the private contractors who have been lost. So there you have it. You have two different groups doing the war, and private contractors are not within the military. So whatever they do is unaccounted for in many ways. Then you have Edward Bernays. You probably know that name, Edward Bernays.
Yeah, the propaganda expert.
Exactly. Support our troops. You have all these cards with the yellow ribbons. And look, I understand people are well-intentioned, just like you have the war on cancer and all these nonprofit organizations. I don't want to mix here, where people are sending billions of dollars that less than 5% goes into research. Everything else goes into paying management and administration. But in this case, you know, support our troops is just the Edward Bernays propaganda machine uniting you. Because if Ole and I start talking about this publicly, then all those people who are brainwashed to say, Mel, you're not supporting our troops. That's not true. We support our troops. We support our men and women in uniform. I do. As long as it's done to protect the country. But we're really not protecting the country. We're just perpetuating an eternal war for a few.
I tell you, this one, support our troops, that one is one of the best one they've ever pulled off.
Yeah.
Because what does it mean? It means absolute zero. It means support our hidden agenda by giving us your kids and your sons and so on, so we can use them as cannon fodder. That is what it says. But it's turned around so that everyone who doesn't support it are not nationalistic. You are not supporting your nation. It's absolutely not true. I would say support your troops by informing them to whose agenda they're serving. Inform them before they get blown up. before they get blown to pieces or before they commit atrocities, awful, awful things in the name of someone else's greed. But these things, these innocent people that they're killing in innocent countries, because this is what they are. I mean, these are unjust wars. But it's their soil, their souls that get soiled by the blood of innocent victims, and they have to live with it. Not that elite few, they couldn't care less. But this is also why you see so many suicides among these poor people who have been so duped into thinking that just because it's called Operation Stardust, Operation Freedom, or Operation Liberty, or Desert Storm, or some fancy word, makes it okay. Look, I mean, Tony Blair, George Bush Jr., and Dick Cheney and so were sentenced for having caused the war in Iraq for no reason whatsoever. The whole thing, America has nothing to do there. NATO has nothing to do in this country to start with. They used 9/11 to start the war on terror. That's another expression that means absolute zero. And it's a way of them to be able to continue it forever and ever and ever, because they're fighting an invisible enemy. The war on terror, who are you fighting? It doesn't matter. Wherever we go, we fight the war on terror. Well, I'm sorry, you are actually the terrorists doing it. The people that were claimed to be on the planes hitting the Twin Towers, not saying that there were planes, none of them were from Afghanistan, and yet that was the country that they went for to start with. Go figure.
You know,
it's oil, drugs, pedophile trafficking, money, control. That's the whole game. Sorry, I didn't.
No, that's fine.
You.
God, G-O-D, gold, oil, and drugs. But, you know, people knew that there more U.S. troops died by suicide than in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. They probably would not feel the same way as they do today. But, you know, I have a heart, you have a heart, and I know a lot of our soldiers have a heart. They thought they were doing the right thing. I mean, look at what happened to Pat Tillman. I bet you there are a lot of people listening to us. And I know you do listen, because I see you right now on my map, who's on the website, and I see all the military bases around the world, including Afghanistan. And I have a lot of subscribers who are military, and they write to me. And they tell me, I know you know who you are. Some of you are members of our forum. And you tell me privately, you know what's happening. You have been awakened. But a lot of you who sign up for, say, 4 years or 8 years, you are in the middle of it and you can't get out. Because if you get out, or if you even speak up, you lose all your benefits. You may be even dishonorably discharged. I know. But there's something that can be done within the organization, so you can awaken the people around you, your fellow soldiers, so that everybody can come to the conclusion that what you're doing there is really not protecting the freedom. Like what happened in World War II. Those were true people who volunteered to get rid of Hitler. And, you know, even though that part of history is very changed, there are many things that may not be clear. And you know what they say? History is written by the winners. Anyway, what do you say about that?
Totally agree with you. And I would also say that the state, people in the U.S. are talking so much about freedom and so on when it comes. I would just say, do you know any other country that have attacked any other nation as many times as the U.S. without having been attacked themselves? There's absolutely no comparison. I mean, the states... I'm saying this not with disrespect. I'm just saying this is a fact, have been the war bully of the globe. I mean, you look upon countries like Libya, or you say Iran and so on. Please check out how many wars did Iran start? How many wars did Libya start? How many wars did Iraq start? How many wars did whatever country? It would be like 1, 2, maybe 3 over the many, many decades. You look at the states, I don't even want to go into it, but it's like, how many wars have the states been into the last 100 years?
I lost count.
I mean, it's, and you're being pumped with this beautiful word called freedom. I would say, leave these other countries alone. These are innocent countries. You are there because there's either its strategic position or its oil or drugs. These are the main factors, gold, minerals, these type of things. That is why you are in these countries. It has nothing to do with liberty or freedom. And you will also find out that the local population, there's a reason why they don't look very happy when you come driving down the street. There's a reason why they might throw a rock at you, even though you signed up thinking that you were there to liberate them. It's time to wake up, because so many people are getting hurt here because we are not awake. And this small little group of so-called elite, I call them the lightless or the minority, they are nothing without you. They're nothing. Do you know, I was standing when I held that speech in front of this building, this Marriott Hotel in Copenhagen, I said to the crowd, okay, so this is a very big part of the global elite. How many are there? Is the hotel absolutely packed with them? No. Is one floor of the hotel absolutely packed with them? No. Is one conference or two conference rooms maybe packed with them? Yes. Okay, compare these two rooms with the rest, the size of Copenhagen. Now take these two rooms and compare them with the size of Denmark, of Europe, of the whole world. It is you can't even see it. It's a tiny dot, like a dust dot, you know, when you compare them. They're a couple of thousand. We are 7 billion people. That we let them get away and let them rule us, it's an absolute joke. When they say go to war, you should say, listen, I'd rather be with my family. I prefer to have a drink and go have a nice time with my girlfriend. You know, let Henry Kissinger get out in the boxing gloves and he can go himself. No, no, no. It's never them. It's never their sons. It's normal people that are being slaughtered for absolutely no reason but their greed. So it's so tragic. So, so tragic.
And, you know, I live in the desert and we have many manufacturing facilities here, defense contractors, and some of them are my friends. I interact with them. Our families interact with each other. You know, one of my friends was one of the developers of the Patriot missile, very proud of what he did during Gulf War I. And when I see that, and I think, you know, these people have children, they have to put food on their table, and this is what they do. And this is just one company out of hundreds of defense contractors. So what Eisenhower told us, and he was, by the way, in my opinion, one of the architects of the military-industrial complex, but he realized what he had done, and he warned us. And then Kennedy came along, tried to do something about it, and we know the rest of the history. I think that it is this Hydra that cannot die. It continues to expand, and it has to find its own way to survive. And we need, from the bottom, as you said, as you very eloquently stated, how many people we have in those rooms. It's nothing in comparison to 7 billion strong. And by listening to shows like this one and realizing that we don't have an agenda. Actually, we do. Our agenda is the truth. And our agenda is to save humankind and bring peace and harmony the way it used to be. Because this is the way the planet used to be. And there's no reason why we shouldn't be that way again. Ole Damigard, once again, thank you so much for being back to Veritas. We said a lot of deep things that can get us in trouble, but hey, if it's the truth and it can help our children live a better life in the future, so be it, right?
You know, when I was holding this speech, there was one guy that got really pale in the crowd and he was standing quite close to me and he moved away. And afterwards he came back and he said, I'm really sorry, but there was this guy up on the roof and he was aiming something at you. And he got really scared. He wanted to get out of the line of fire. I said to him, listen, maybe it was just a microphone. He couldn't hear what I was saying, you know, something like that. But if that would be the case, it's part of the game. So many beautiful people have left the planet before. And if that is the price to pay, I really do not want to. But what can you do? I would say, I have a prayer that I really love, and it goes like this. May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light.
Interesting that the last couple of minutes, your sound started getting a little bit convoluted because of all these deep words. I guess somebody doesn't want us to share them. But Ole, as always, good to have you, a brother in truth. Stay in touch and keep us posted of all your new work.
I'll be most happy to do that.
Your website, lightonconspiracies.com. As I said before, you have been at this for decades, putting your safety and your sweat and tears into helping the world. So I hope people can support your work. Is there anything new you're working on that you want to talk about?
I'm working nonstop here in different areas at the moment. I might be part of a new network in England that I've been invited in to maybe take part of that. I have no idea. I'm taking one day at a time. I'm just know that I will continue. I will do everything I can. And I think every one of us just need to, instead of trying to change the world, look in the mirror and say, am I in any way or form taking part of this? Am I in any way or form or shape taking part of this hidden agenda? Contractors, you know, electricians, plumbers that delivers toy, or you know, people that make toilets for FEMA camps, or people that are into surveillance things to control the rest of us, that are sitting listening into this, trying to mess up the sound of these type of things. I mean, this is standard. Every time I or anyone else that talks about the same topics, there's technical problems all the time. So either it's incredible bad luck or somebody is interfering. Fine by me, but you that sit there and mess this thing up, look yourself in the mirror. Whose agenda are you serving? Please remember that if I'm right, based on 30 years of research, the ship is going down. And in not that long a future, people who have cooperated with this group would be looked upon as traitors, you know. And the public eye is not very mild when it comes to things like this. So I would deeply, deeply suggest, please wake up now when time is. See what you can do to change it, turn the way back in the world back in as much balance as possible. Step forward. Stop cooperating. Go out in transparency, see if you can be part of exposing or somehow stopping by not cooperating, you know, stop controlling the rest of us, stop surveilling the rest of us. You know, anybody, truck drivers that delivers food to these places, or SWAT teams or police officers or sheriffs or soldiers, whoever, including ourselves, look in the mirror. I mean, many of us are so asleep and have been for such a long time. This is not a time for wimps. This is a time to wake up. Every day we continue being asleep, innocent people are being hurt, you know, being killed, slaughtered at home. Many, many people are sitting in prisons, absolutely innocent, totally innocent. And you might very well be next if you don't wake up, because these people are ruthless. They do not care about you. So I can only, from the bottom of my heart, beg you all, including myself, to see what's going on, wake up and see what you can do, and start living by example. You know, raise the energy, start doing good things, go out in your neighborhood, help people right, left and center. Do good, be good, stand up fearlessly in truth and just say, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not cooperating anymore. It's enough. We've had enough.
And instead of... Go ahead.
No, please continue.
No, I was going to say, and instead of changing the world, do as Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world.
I can only say hallelujah, baby. That's the way to do it. The one in the mirror, that's the only one you can change, for sure. So change that person, and you've done an incredible step forward.
Well, Ole Damigord, thank you so much once again.
My absolute pleasure, Mel. Anytime I can be here, that goes for anywhere, anyone that hears me or any shows or interviews, whatever I can do, I'm right there. If it's possible, I'm right there. You can count me in.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too, Mel.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Ole Demigord and his crusade for the truth. May he always be safe, and may he also receive the support he deserves. Go to his website, lightonconspiracies.com, and show your support. And speaking of support, thank you for making our truth journey a reality. And I'll leave you with a quote by Paul Valery. The best way to make your dreams come true is to wake up. Thanks for listening. I'm Mel Fabregas. Until next week, be well, and remember, be skeptical, but don't close your mind.